How it's sad to say you've gone. I remember what they said. Now I'm going out of my head. Till the band just had to say, you learned your lesson all the way.
And joining us right now at PNP Network is Mike Rabin. He, of course, is one of the leaders of the Five Americans, the guys that did the Western Union. We just got off the phone with, of course, your buddy John. And this is an exciting time for the Five Americans, kind of re-recording, going back in the studio, getting back together again.
Yeah, we feel like it is. We're starting to get excited about a resurgence of the 60s, and I know that the 60s groups are becoming very popular again. And it's kind of neat to go retro, and we're really looking forward to getting to play again and getting in front of audiences and really enjoying ourselves.
Now, are you doing anything in terms of getting together with other bands?
Well, we're working right now with Lee Brovitz, who is with Shadows of Night, but he also is now a booking agency, and we're looking at some summer tours and maybe a Caribbean boat tour in January 2004. We've just gotten back together and gotten our recordings re-recorded and our original ones. And so our booking plans were the next step. And so we're kind of very beginning of that next step. So we haven't firmed too many dates up yet, but we're working on it.
Hmm. And it's obviously people, wherever you go, will remember Western Union.
Well, I hope so. I think it's entered the national, if not international, consciousness, and I hope that it lives on and speaks for us forever.
Now, were you a writer on most of the songs as well?
Yes. John and Norman Ezell and myself, John Durrell, the organ player, and Norman Ezell, the rhythm player, we collaborated on all the tunes, the original tunes that the Five Americans did, and Western Union, that was the most successful, was really it's kind of hard to remember that far back as to who germinated the idea of a guy getting a Dear John letter, instead of a letter, he gets a telegram.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that was our way of being proactive in the technology field back then. But it was one of us's idea, and we got in the studio, and we wrote that down or made it up or whatever you want to call it in just a short time, within 30 minutes, and had it recorded in an hour and a half, and never dreamed it would be, sell a million plus copies. And so
now,
it was a real surprise.
Does that song still generate royalties for you?
Well, yes, it does. First of all, that song was covered by the Searchers. I hope I have that correct, one of the English groups. And besides that, it's played now around 18,000 to 20,000 plays per quarter.
Wow.
In the United States and Canada, and gets quite a bit of overseas play. And so the writers, of course, benefit from that.
Wow.
And it just last year we received an award from Broadcast Music Incorporated, whom I'm sure you're familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
We got an award for over a million plays on the radio. And interesting enough, your listeners, or you might be interested in a little trivia, that's like taking a 45 record and putting it on a turntable and playing it over and over for 5 years straight.
Hmm.
A million plays. But of course, that's how many times it's been reported. We don't know how many times it's been played, actual.
Wow. Now, some of the other songs that you folks did too, have they been covered by other bands?
Not really. Not charted anyway.
Yeah.
So what we've earned kind of on our own. Western Union and Zip Code and some of those were so stylized to one group's type of music, which was ours, that I could see where they would be hard to cover. And that's kind of proven out over the years.
I mean, I look at the picture of you guys in 1966.
We haven't seen
it. And it could have been the Beatles. It could have been the Dave Clark Five. It could have been some of these other bands. You guys all looked the same and sounded a lot alike, too.
Well, you know, we did, really. And there was no getting away from the British Tide influence. I mean, there was just no way getting around it. And we began our careers as about the same time that the Beatles hit America. And so we were very influenced by it. But it only took us a year or a year and a half in the recording industry to realize that we needed to be different. And so we kept the British look as much as we could because it was a popular look. But our music and our name we changed to be a dichotomy of that and have, you know, of course, the Five Americans and Western Union was nowhere near Beatlesque, nor was Zip Code or any of the other songs. And so we sort of got pigeonholed at the same time as a bubblegum rap, bubblegum type, or a light rock or whatever. But we were really trying to do something that was not British. And it was hard to do anything not British in 1967.
I see the light was a different kind of song than Western Union.
Yes, it was. And I think that's when we first were searching for a way. That was our first chart record, and we were searching for a way to be a heavy hitter, and that kind of kept us in the heavy garage punk mode, and it really was influenced by people like the Yardbirds and other British groups that were a little heavier than say the Beatles or the Dave Clark Five. So that was our attempt at a little heavier sound, and we just sort of evolved out of that. We became more interested in melodic melodies, and that's when we did Sound of Love and Evil Not Love and Zip Code, all of which charted, so that's kind of how that evolved.
When you were growing up in Oklahoma, what kind of music were you listening to?
Well, my first Christmas that I can remember getting gifts, my mom gave me a little turntable and Hound Dog by Elvis Presley, and the flip side of that was Mystery Train. I'm probably getting Heartbreak Hotel, I believe. And I started out, that really captured my imagination. And so at night I had a little radio that if I turned it just right, I could reach WNOE in New Orleans when it kicked its power up at night. And I could catch people like Frankie Ford, C. Cruz, and those type of tunes, those Bobby V tunes and Bobby Vinton tunes, and we were I was sort of raised on that, and that was in the late 50s, and of course, the minute the Beatles hit, that changed things drastically.
When did you start playing guitar, Mike?
Gee, I started when I was about 8 years old. I went down to a pawn shop and bought one. After having tried making one and plucking on a fiddle for a while, I went down to the pawn shop and found one for $8, and I had 800 pennies saved, and so I bought that, and it was a homemade guitar, but it was actually a guitar, and you know, I learned to play that in one day. My grandmother taught me 8 or 10 chords, and I knew those in one day and could play them in one day, and it was just as natural as could be. And so from then on, I tried to improve every year.
When did you start writing?
Got a little better guitar.
When did you start writing?
Well, I started writing. Actually, I was 18 years old before I really had the thought that I could write. And I've got to credit the Beatles for that and the British influx for that because they jerked everybody around a little bit and said, hey, you know, let's get creative. And I thought, gee, we could do something like that. You know, I could do something like that. I can create something. And I loved that so much. When a guy brought me the Meet the Beatles album, and I looked at those guys, and I said, geez, what a strange-looking group. And I put it on the turntable, and I went, wow, you know, you can't do that. You can't do that. But they were doing it.
Yeah, they sure were.
And I said, we can do that, too, or we can try our own version of that. Or I was saying I could because the group hadn't formed yet. But
So yeah, it's Southeastern State University. John made sure that I knew that the first incarnation of the Mutineers was actually the John Durrell Trio.
Yeah, John, that's true. Yeah, that's a true story. We did play at the lake there nearby, and John called me one night. We'd never played together, and he said, listen, we need a drummer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd never even looked at a set of drums. But I went on out to the lake, and we sat down in a very formal atmosphere, and I played brushes on the drums, and John played the piano, and we had a bass player, a stand-up bass player. And that was actually our first gig.
So there you go.
Yeah.
That was the beginnings, when you guys were the Mutineers, and I guess that really the big turning point was I See the Light, when you guys became the Five Americans. Now, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Your version of how the Five Americans name came.
Well, I can tell you that it was not our idea. It was there was a guy that worked for we went down to Dallas when we were sophomores in college, and we played a club down there called the Pirates Net, and we played it 7 days a week. And a guy came in and said, would you be interested in signing a recording contract? And we said, yes, of course, of course, of course, of course. And so it was Abnack Records, that was a local record company, and they had a guy working for them. His name was Roger Guckenheimer, and he was a very talented drummer and a good A&R guy. And he said, well, first thing we got to do is change your name. We said, well, no, the Mutineers, we thought, you know, was very dashing and everything that we weren't. But he said, well, you're not going to like this, but we want to change it to the Five Americans. And we said, you know, I said, that's not dashing and daring and mysterious.
Yeah, I think you guys probably would have made it as the Mutineers as well.
You think so?
Yeah.
That would have been too bad we don't have a time machine.
I don't think the name change was the key. I think it was sound and the promotion.
Yeah, you're probably right.
You're
probably right. I think that was a fledgling way of reaching towards the British influx to call ourselves the Mutineers, because it was close to I don't know. It was close. It sounded a bit British.
Yeah.
To us, it did, anyway.
Well, it could have been, you know, anti-British, too.
Well, that's right. That's right. Because a mutineer is a mutineer, isn't it? Is a mutineer.
That's right. Well, you guys had quite a following as the Mutineers.
Yeah, we did.
You had the Pirate's Nook, and, I mean, people were following the group.
Well, when we actually went down there, and John may have told the story, but when we got to Dallas, there were no places to play, and we went down to the Pirate's Nook, and it was a real dive, there's no doubt. But we went in, and we were desperate at this point, and I asked the club owner who was behind the bar if we could sit in for the band that was playing beach music on stage, and he said, I don't care. And I said, okay, would you ask them? And so he asked, and they said, yeah, they can sit in. We need a break anyway. So we sat in, and we were not as good as that group. But we did some crazy things on stage, and like playing our guitars backwards and me riding on Norman's shoulders and doing all kinds of stunts. The crowd just loved us, took right to us right away. And unfortunately for the other band, we had their job that night. Because I asked the club owner, I said, if we're better than they are, can we have a job? And can we have their job?
Uh-huh.
He said, well, we'll see. And the next night we were playing at the Pirate's Nook, and we did have a regular following, and built a pretty good club following. But we were not content with being the competition at that time was being the best club band, and we were a little bit more ambitious than that. And I know that sounds like it's Monday morning quarterbacking and easy to say, but we really were driven to do something better than that. And when we got signed to the local label, we had a chance to do that, and a chance to practice in a practice hall and work on original songs.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I understand when you guys re-recorded recently, you actually went back to the Robin Hood Bryan studio?
Yes, it was like going back in time. The very same equipment, very same microphones, same everything, and it was very, very strange, you know? Was it deja vu all over again?
Yeah, well, you know, the sound of the CD actually It stands up pretty well compared to the old stuff.
Yeah, I think it does. I think it's, you know, it may be a little bit too much better than the old stuff. We tried to, and this is maybe a poor choice of words, but we tried to dumb down a little bit because we have improved, I hope, since we recorded in 1967, and so it was hard to keep from adding a little slicker lead or, you know, a little fancier drum part or something. So we tried to stay as faithful to the original as possible.
Mm. Now, you guys are going to be recording a new CD. Sunday is just putting together another Greatest Hits package, right?
Yes, they have. They have purchased the ABNAC catalog, which included John and Robin, who had the chart record Do It Again a Little Bit Slower, which I produced. And it went to 19, I think, in Billboard.
You produced that one, huh? That was the owner's son.
Yes, it was. Absolutely. Yeah. That's right. And so, and Bob Irwin at Sundays had told me that by January of last year, the best of the Five Americans was coming out. But it seems that he's bought that entire package, and probably what he's doing is getting ready to release all artists on that as a big package of some sort.
Mm.
And so it slowed things down, and we're anticipating getting to hear that too, because Bob's been very loving about our records, and he's treated our remixes very well and everything.
He does a nice job in packaging too. I like the packaging.
Yeah, very good packaging, and Sundays is a real first class outfit, and which is not to say we don't want to record our own CDs now that we have our rights back to many of to the name and to the songs and the writers' royalties and those type things.
Right. Well, that's the best thing you can do is make your own and market it your own and keep all the money.
That's it. That's right. That's steps. That's what we're going to do. And we've already got three songs to that effect, and all we need is about seven more. And
yeah, I was telling John that it's nice to record some of the old stuff, but it'd be nice to hear some of the new stuff as well.
Well, exactly. And we've all written some new stuff, and it'll just be a thrill to go in the studio and record all those and cull out what we don't like and get the best of that, best of the last 30 years, you might say, and package that. And I think people would be, that people that were Five American fans, and I know there's plenty out there because I have a website with 22,000 hits on it, and fiveamericans.com. I'll get that in there.
Right, well, we're going to put a link right to it.
Oh, that's great. That's right. And I went to your site, which I think is a great site, and I have it bookmarked, and I look at it every day.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Well, pretty soon you'll be able to listen to yourself.
I'm sorry, what?
I said pretty soon you'll be able to listen to yourself on the site.
That'd be great. Well, just feel free to harvest whatever you need from mine, we'll do the same.
Yeah, it'll be great. I'm looking forward to seeing the Five Americans in concert. Now, I understand that, is it Ludwig Talent that's promoting you or Mars Talent?
Well, it's Ludwig, and I'm not sure what, it's actually, how do you say that again? Because is it Lustwig, isn't it?
Yeah, it could be, yeah.
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah.
And Brovitz and, let me see, the agency that Brovitz, he's in partners with a guy, and I'm trying to think of the agency's name.
Is it one of the agencies? I think that John was mentioning was owned by the guy from the Shadows of Night.
Yeah, that's Lee Brovitz.
Yeah,
and he and I corresponded. We correspond kind of regularly. We did a show together out in North Carolina year before last, and we've kind of kept in touch ever since. But he's formed a company with another guy, and the name just escapes me at this moment, but it's a guy's name and then agency, that like the Jim Brown agency.
Well, it'll be on your site eventually.
Yes.
So absolutely. They'll see it there.
And they book the Box Tops and Bobby V and some of those, and Mary Lee Rush. And this year, we just got together, and they've already put their deals together, so we're looking look down the road with them.
Yeah. Leftig has tons of great tours that they put out.
Yeah, and he does a lot of corporate events, I think.
Yeah, they do a lot of stuff like that, but they also do a lot of concert promotion in different areas of the country.
Yeah.
And they've got some big names that they've signed. So I'm glad you guys are part of that. That's good.
We're going to get our feet wet here on March 15th, and our college, our university that we graduated from is flying everybody back in. And
Southeastern State University, huh?
Yes.
Wow.
And we're doing a fete there, and it's a $100 a plate thing, and so we're going to have to be good.
You're going to have to. For $100 a plate, you guys better be serving them afterwards.
I tell you what, we're going to be on the spot, aren't we? So we're going to. That's kind of our alpha, if you would, in getting our group back together.
Now they're going to have Dennis Rodman and Reba McEntire there too.
I don't know. I wish they would. They'd probably show us up though. So no, it's going to be a five American thing, and. I think it's going to be a lot of fun because we're going to have all week to practice and rehearse.
Well, I'm all set. I've got my five American all down. I'm all set now.
Super. Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, you got it almost right. Deep to deep to deep.
Yeah.
More than deep to deep to
deep. Yeah. Well, I like to have a variation. I'm a creative kind of guy. So I'll take the Western Union success story and change it into the Snyder success story.
There you go. There you go. HTTPWWWSnyder.com.
Actually, I do have MarkSnyder.com, but that sends you over to P&P Network.
Oh, okay.
You know, well, it's all related. It's all one and the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, you know, I was talking with John, and I didn't realize that he wrote things like Dark Lady for Cher and stuff. Do you have other songs that you've written outside the Five Americans that have become...
Not that have been. Now, when the Five Americans broke up, I signed with Uni label, and I did have an album out of all original tunes, and the only two artists they had was myself and Elton John, and Elton got all the attention, which he probably deserved, and that I thought was just an excellent album, and it really didn't go anywhere because it was not promoted,
Was it re-released? Has it been re-released at all?
It has not been re-released, and it sits, I suppose, in the Uni archives. And I hope that someday I can get my hands on that.
Manager. That's probably worth something with Elton as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, though, because maybe you could have been the Bernie Taupin, you know?
Yeah, that's right. I've met Bernie Taupin. He's a very nice guy.
Yeah, we had him on our show. I had him on the show and Elton on the show a little while ago.
Oh, great.
And, you know, that would have been a nice gig writing with him.
Absolutely. Well, you know what? It's funny. I met Bernie Taupin on the 10th floor of the Union Building and Universal Building, and just after I'd signed the contract, I'd signed a contract and it had released. I was back up there for some promotion, and he opened up his satchel that he carried. It's kind of like a European purse, and reached in there and pulled out one of my albums.
There you go.
So they knew who I was anyway. So
that's the ultimate compliment.
Yes, absolutely. He said he really liked it. And I think a lot of other people would, too, had it gotten out. But as far as me writing for what John has done, I have not. And I've written for my own amazement, but not for others.
Yeah.
Actually, after that album didn't do anything, I sort of checked out of the music business and checked out of the music industry altogether and got married and had some kids. Because, you know, I looked around, and there I was. I was 26, 27, and I had no fireplace or a dog or anything else. You know, I thought, gee, this is getting not fun right now. So I got married, and like I said, and settled down, and actually went back and got my master's degree and became an administrator in the public schools around Oklahoma in several places. And now I teach technology in our high school here.
Hmm.
So I've really enjoyed that part of my career as well.
Now, how many children do you have?
I have two. One is in college, cleaning me out, and I have another one that's 13.
Now, either of the children musically inclined?
Well, the older one plays a pretty good guitar, but they're not standouts, I don't think, at least not yet.
Hmm.
But
sometimes that legacy passes on, you know?
You know, and sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it skips a generation.
Yeah, that's true. Because now, were your parents musicians?
Not really, no, but my grandparents were.
Right, because your grandma taught you to play guitar?
Yes, absolutely. So there you go. It proves it, bears it out. And then sometimes, you know, that seed just falls right at the bottom of the tree. You know, like Frank Sinatra Jr. or Nancy Sinatra. Or whatever.
Yeah. So Frank Sinatra Jr. is an interesting character. I had him on the show here. And, you know, people don't realize that not only is he a great musician, he's a great conductor, and but I mean, you know, with his father's shadow, there's no room.
Yeah.
It's a really, what a difficult situation. I mean, obviously that name opens up doors, but on the other hand, people have expectations that are just impossible to live up to.
That's right. And you know, the same was for Nancy as well. And we, you know, the only time, the biggest hit she had, besides the ones with Lee Hazlewood, was Something Stupid.
With her father, yeah.
And in 1967, that was number one in Billboard. And number two was Eleanor Rigby. And I forgot what number three was, but Western Union was number four, and we could not beat any of those out. Because Something Stupid and Eleanor Rigby must have sold 5 or 10 million records.
Oh, you know? Sure. Well, you guys, I think that you sold over 2 million.
Yeah,
of Western
I think
Union.
Probably so. Yeah. You know, we fell into that crooked manager trap, and as many artists did, and where your debits never overcome your credits, and that kind of thing, so, you know, we didn't see a lot of money out of it back then, and we were on retainer, and the more money we drew, you know, the more we spent, the less we got, and we were not an unusual story. But since then, our past manager has passed, and we've all the rights and everything has reverted back to us, and we're actually getting royalty checks that we should have been getting for the last 30 years.
Oh, sure. Unfortunately, that is a frequent thing. But the good part about it, though, is because of nostalgia, the name, and once you hit success of any kind, the name is money in the bank.
Absolutely.
And you got your money. You got your name back, which is good.
Yes, that's right. And did you know that Disneyland booked 72 60s acts last summer?
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Well, I know that even around here in the what they call the tents, the South Shore Music Circus, the Cape Cod Melody Tent, they book the Turtles and the Union Gap and all these bands every year.
That's
and
right.
They had the Happy Together Union here, and it was great with Spanky and Our Gang. And
well, you know, what the real trick is getting an all-original group from the 60s.
Yeah.
And I think the Box Tops are all originals. In fact, they advertise themselves. And we're all original.
Now, I saw the Box Tops in person, where none of the Box Tops were the real ones.
None of them were?
Box Tops. I didn't realize it until I heard them playing. It was terrible.
It was just exploiting the name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of the guys said, oh, yeah, I played with them. And I was like, get out of here. You guys stink. Yeah, I love the Box
really
Tops.
That really keeps the crowd.
Because I'm sure that the Five Americans, there's probably, during all the time when you guys didn't have your own name, there was probably someone touring with that name that had nothing to do with you guys.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure.
And probably people saying, ooh, that's terrible. That didn't sound like that.
Exactly. Well, you know, what we don't know maybe won't hurt us.
That's true. But but in your point is well understood, and that is that the picture of the Five Americans in 1966 and the picture of you guys now, all the members are the same.
Yes. Hey, you can tell that.
Yeah.
Although a bit rugged around the edges, you can tell that.
No, the time is the same on all of us, my friend.
I know.
You know, you can't compare a picture of yourself in 1966 and say, "Oh, I'm gonna look like that now." You'd want to look like that now.
That's right.
You know, you look okay. You've aged all right.
Well, I appreciate that. I got my picture in the local paper here, and I told the editor, I saw him at the restaurant the other day, and I said, I bet you sold 50% more paper since you put my paper. He said, no, 50% less. Put your picture in there.
Well, we have to conclude this, but I wanted to, again, say thanks to Mike for joining us. And the FiveAmericans.com, FiveAmerican.com is on the internet. You can check it out.
Absolutely.
And you guys will be touring. I know that Lefty Talon will be doing some stuff with you, and we're going to put a link to their site as well.
Super.
I want to say
that if it weren't for guys like you guys, these groups would be nowhere and nothing. And we appreciate you playing our songs and promoting us and all the good things that you do.
Well, all I have to say to that is... da 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 da.
And you've got it down for right now.
There
that's
you go.
Right.
All right. It was good to talk to you, Mike.
It's great talking to you too, Mark.
I'm sure we'll talk in the future sometime.
Please call sometime.
And if you're ever in Boston, please get a hold of us.
I will do it.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Take care.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.